And now, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense. Listen now to Act One of The Black Door, starring Robert Reddick, featuring Ralph Camargo, and written especially for Suspense by Robert Arthur.
The mistake I made was going through that black door. If I'd left it shut the way it was, sealed tight, everything would have been fine. I'd have married Marcia, become a full professor, had my name in all the papers. Well, there's no use telling the story backwards, is there? First things first, as old Professor Wentworth always said. And the first thing in this case is the grant I received to hunt for a lost city in Central America. The city of the fire god. Which might mean something, or might mean nothing. Anyway, I got the grant from the university, chartered a modern helicopter for 3 months, flew it down to Central America, got the necessary government permissions, and made my base of operations the tiny little town of San Marcos on the coast. As nearly as I could figure from the manuscript, the city of the fire god was someplace among the mountains in that area. So I flew back and forth over the mountains in the helicopter, keeping a lookout for ruins in the jungle or the mountain valleys. And for 2.5 months, I saw nothing except trees and rocks. In the town, I was charitably looked upon as a crazy Yankee. And finally, even the children stopped staring at me. But I was getting pretty discouraged. And trying to forget my troubles with a glass of tequila in a little garden outside the town's only cafe, while some native with a guitar serenaded his girl nearby.
Waiter?
What?
Oh, there you are.
Pardon, senor. I am not the waiter. He's busy.
Busy? No one's been busy in this town since Columbus discovered America.
That's very true, senor, but I have paid the waiter to go somewhere else. That's why he's busy. look at this, senor.
Well, let me see that. It's a tiny statue, very old.
Huh?
Statue carved out of volcanic basalt in the style of the oldest known Mayan carving. Where did you get that?
Oh, that is easily answered, senor.
Well, then tell me.
My grandfather, he gave it to me when he died.
Well, where did he get it?
Senor, that is a harder question.
Now, look, if you came here just to play games with
No, senor. That is why I sent away the waiter. So we could talk confidentially.
Yes, well, let's talk confidentially. Where did that little statue come from?
From the mountain, senor.
But the whole country is mountain.
Si, that is true, but... you see, my grandfather was a great hunter. Once he followed a wounded jaguar high into the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
Some savage natives then followed my grandfather.
Yes?
He was wounded, and to escape, he climbed a great cliff.
Go on.
And he reached the top, and on the other side... He saw a dead city.
A dead city?
Si, senor. Silent. Lifeless. Far below him.
Yes?
He tried to climb down to it. And he fell, senor. For 3 days he lay unconscious. And when he recovered his senses, he had the fever.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow he found his way out. He does not know how. He staggered back to his home.
Yes.
They found him in the jungle, crawling on his hands and knees, clutching this little statue and saying over and over, La Puerta Negra, La Puerta Negra.
The what?
The black door, senor.
The black door?
Si, senor. And my poor grandfather, he was never strong enough to go hunting again, but he kept this little statue. And he said it had saved his life.
What did he mean by the black door?
Oh, one cannot say, senor. He could not remember.
Surely he went back to the lost city?
Bueno, he was not strong enough. Besides... There were the savages.
But you mean nobody ever tried to find the city again?
Well, why should they, senor? It belonged to the dead. Well, they might be angry if the living came to disturb them,
eh? Those old superstitions.
Si, senor. Now, me, I am not superstitious, eh? I speak American well. The senor wishes to find this lost city. I, Pedro Ramirez, know where it is.
Go on.
You see, my grandfather described it to me. The mountains where it is hidden.
Yes.
They are 3 days' walk from here.
No, 3 days. Now, that's 50 or 60 miles. What direction?
Senor, that is the question, eh? What direction? A most important question, no?
I get it. How much?
A mere pittance for a rich Yankee, senor. $1,000 American.
$1,000?
And one half of all the treasure.
What treasure is that?
Oh, there must be treasure, senor. Why else would you seek this lost city?
Because I want to become a professor at a university and marry a girl named Marcia, whose father is head of the Department of Archaeology. All right. $1,000 if you actually guide me to the city you say your grandfather found.
And half the treasure.
Yes. Half the treasure. If any. We sealed the bargain with a glass of tequila. And the next day, Pedro came with me in the helicopter. He directed me to fly to the southeast, and I did, hovering as low as I dared over the rocky edges and jungle.
Well, we've come more than 50 miles, Pedro. No sign of that city yet.
Oh, yes, senor. There to the left. There is the mountain.
What, that? Now, you're crazy. That's the cone of an extinct volcano.
Si, senor. And the lost city is inside the volcano.
Oh, now, wait a minute. How could that be?
Well, I do not know. I was not there when he was built.
On the other hand, city of the fire god. I wonder. Well, I haven't looked into that volcano yet, so here goes.
We lifted high in the air over the top of the old dead volcano. And we came out over a deep circular valley, grown up with jungle now. But there, in the center of the jungle, was a group of stone buildings dominated by a vast ruined temple.
Senor! Senor! The lost city of my grandfather. Oh, it is rich with treasure. I have the feeling.
Well, even if it isn't, this is one of the biggest finds in the history of Central America. We're going down now. We'll sit down on that level spot right in front of the temple.
We settled in front of the old temple. I cut the motors. And for a moment, we just sat there taking it in. The stone towers. The ancient carvings. The massive walls that had been put into place by men whose bones had turned to dust maybe 3,000-4,000 years ago. And then we climbed out. We were both armed. We had flashlights. And I had a small hammer and chisel tucked into my belt. Aboard the helicopter, I had a case of dynamite if any blasting was necessary, but this was just to be a preliminary survey, so I left it where it was. Pedro and I found ourselves on a big stone plaza with the partially ruined temple in front of us. The entrance was flanked by two tremendous stone carvings. Oddly enough, very like something from Egypt. Human figures with heads that were vaguely dog-like, which made them seem most unhuman.
Senor, those statues, I do not like them.
Yes, they are rather odd. But I'm more interested in those designs carved in the rock above them.
Eh? Designs, senor? Oh, they but show the moon, the new moon and the old moon.
Yes, and there are more moons all over the front of the temple. Now, that's unusual. Most of the old civilizations in this area worship the sun.
Si, senor, but I cannot help wondering.
Wondering what?
Why the man who made those statues put the heads of dogs on them.
It was dark inside the temple, but our flashlights gave us enough light. Vast stone pillars supported a roof high above us as we moved down along a lengthy corridor. And then we came into a central rotunda that got some sunlight through a crack in the roof.
Look! Look, senor! Gold! Gold! 10 statues! 12 statues! And each of them solid gold! Come, look, senor! Gold! Gold! I have reached!
Pedro was right. Ranged in a circle in the middle of the rotunda were 12 golden statues about 5 feet high. They were all human figures with dog-like heads. And they were all looking at a spot on the floor in the middle of the circle they made.
Hold, senor! And look! Look, the jewels! Jewels! Baskets of them! Oh, senor! Senor, I am the richest man in the world!
At the foot of each statue, a carved stone basket. And each one has a handful of gems in it. Obviously, these statues were worshipped, and the gems were tribute.
Pedro, have you taken a good look at these statues? Shine your light on this one.
Madre mia! Again, the head of the dog!
Yes, they're all dog-headed statues. And all their eyes are focused on one spot over there. It seems to be something carved on the floor. Let's see what that is.
Ah, senor. That is more strange.
A round black carving on the floor. Almost like a globe or a map.
Good Lord.
Do you know what this is supposed to be?
No, senor, I cannot guess.
It's the moon. Carved on the floor in black basalt, the moon.
Ah, see. Oh, that is most strange,
yes,
no?
You don't know the half of it, because the formations carved here, they're not the formations our astronomers know, unless the Russians have some new pictures they're not talking about. If this carving represents the real geography of the moon... Pedro?
Si, senor.
The artist who carved this must at some time have seen the dark side of the moon, which no human being has ever glimpsed. I know it sounds crazy, but the more I studied that round black carving, the more I was convinced it was an accurate relief map of the dark side of the moon. And then we discovered something else. Around the rim of that black disc was a series of crevices filled with tar. I dug the tar out, and under it, in each crevice, we found a small basalt statuette like the one that Pedro had originally showed me. In each crevice but one, which was empty.
Senor, see? The story of my grandfather is true. This little statue he brought back, look! It just fits into this tiny hole.
Yes, yes, it does. The black door. This must be the black door that he talked about.
Ah, sí, señor. La puerta negra. The black door. But how does it open?
I don't know. Now, wait, wait. Suppose we stand each of these little statues upright.
Okay.
Yes. Yes, they fit tightly like handles. Now, if we push them...
Si, senor, we push.
And it's turning.
I see.
The black disc is turning. And now it's loose. Now we can lift it up.
Let us lift it. Down there, maybe more treasure, eh? More gold, more jewels.
All right. Now it's coming.
See?
There, it's open. And there's a well-worn flight of steps leading down into the heart of the old volcano. We stood there, staring down into that black passageway that seemed to go down, down endlessly. I didn't like the looks of it. But Pedro had gold fever. He thought that there might be whole vaults of treasure down below. I couldn't talk him out of looking, so I went along too. The tunnel sloped downward, ever downward into the heart of the ancient volcano. We came across evidence of much usage, broken pottery, strange carvings on the wall. Our curiosity led us on until presently we came to a cavern whose walls seemed to be lined by a curious growth.
Senor, look!
Yes, yes, mushrooms or something very much like mushrooms. Solid sheets of it all lining the walls.
No, senor, that is not what I mean. Look here. Look through here.
Oh, a narrow crevice. There's a room in there.
It's not a room. It is what is in the room. Come, shine your light. Then let us leave, senor.
What has got you so worked up? It can't be treasure. I see.
See? A skeleton, senor. Many skeletons. Hundreds, many. Lying one upon the other.
Yes, yes. That rocky room is full of human bones. And much as I hate to say it,
What, senor?
The ones I can see best have tooth marks on them.
Oh, senor, let us leave here swiftly. Let us return to the airplane, eh? Let us take the treasure and go.
Easy now, Pedro. These bones have been here hundreds of years, maybe thousands.
Old bones or new bones, I do not like these bones.
And there's no cause for alarm. I don't know.
Why does the senor study so hard the mushrooms on the wall?
Well, these mushrooms certainly haven't been here for 1,000 years, and along here it looks to me as if big handfuls of them have been broken off.
Broken off? For why?
There's only one thing I know of you can do with mushrooms, and that's eat them. Pedro and I stood staring at each other. I was pretty sure that something, or somebody, had recently been eating that mushroom-like fungus. And I was beginning to wonder what, or who, when we heard it from somewhere far down below us.
Senor, what is that?
It sounded like a dog howling.
A dog? No, 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 no. That is no dog.
Well, what if it's not a dog? What is it?
A demon, senor. A devil.
Oh, forget that superstition. There's something down there, impossible as it seems, something living.
And if we do not leave, there will be something dying down here, senor. Please, come, come,
yes,
come.
Yes, but I'm trying to figure out what on earth that could...
Senor Landrish... Those are not dogs upstairs. The statues, the people with heads of dogs upon them. Does the senor not realize what it is that is howling?
Until that second, I hadn't made the connection. And then I realized the full significance of those statues. It couldn't be. It was impossible. But what other answer was there? We turned to head for the surface, and just as we did so, I saw something coming up the tunnel toward us. Something that was a pallid white shape in the light of my flashlight. Something running on all fours and howling hungrily as it did so.
Shoot, senor, shoot!
Okay, that stopped it. Now, let's get out of here. We didn't even stop to look at what I'd shot. I'm not sure I wanted to look. We just turned and ran up that long tunnel to the surface. And as we went, the howling things pursued us. We could hear them behind us like a pack of hungry animals. From time to time, I turned to fire my gun. But I seemed to scare them. We finally popped out into that ruined temple with the 12 dog-headed gods. And I understood at last what that black door was for. It sealed the entrance to the underground world where they lived. Pedro and I flung ourselves on the ground. A great brown slab of black rock was, and we couldn't move it. It was wedged open somehow, and we couldn't get it closed.
Senor! Senor, quickly! They will follow us in a moment!
Gathered down there beyond the first bend. Obviously, they don't like light.
They are getting up their courage.
Well, we've got to shut them in. We can't let those things loose. But we can't shut the black door.
We can do nothing. The helicopter, quickly.
I got it. The dynamite in the helicopter. We'll blow in the mouth of the tunnel.
But, senor...
You heard me. It'll only take 60 seconds. Yeah, that'll keep them quiet another minute or two. Now, come on. Help me with that case of dynamite.
It took us less than a minute to get the case of dynamite, bring it back inside the temple and light a fuse. And then I shoved the whole case down the steps into the black tunnel. Pedro and I hurried back into the open, scrambled into the helicopter, and started the motor just in case.
Ah, Senor Landry.
What is it?
The treasure. The jewels. We did not bring them.
We can get them after the tunnel is blown in. You don't want to tangle with those dog-headed creatures, do you?
No, 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 por los santos, no. But, senor, what are they? They must be demons, for surely they are not of this world.
Well, I agree with you, but they're not demons.
Listen. That does it. Tunnel is closed for good. Now, Pedro...
Senor, the temple is collapsing. And the earth is shaking. Senor, it's an earthquake.
Pedro, there's only one place for us to go, and that's straight up.
The helicopter jumped 1,000 feet straight up, just before the temple crashed on the spot where we had been. And then we watched from a box seat, while the lost city crumbled into ruins. The dynamite blast had triggered off an earthquake, and the earthquake rocked the ground like a man shaking a baby's rattle.
Senor, senor, the jewels, the gold, they are down there under many rocks.
Yes, and so are the dog-headed creatures. Suppose they'd got loose on the world after being caged underground for thousands of years.
Oh, I can only think of all that treasure. For a little while, I was the richest man in the world. I owned a lost city full of jewels. Now I own nothing.
After things quiet down, I can bring back an expedition. We'll dig in the ruins. The jewels will still be there.
You see? See, that is true, no? I will be rich yet, no? I will buy myself 3 automobiles and 12 silk shirts. I will smoke cigars all day long and have servants to do everything. Senor, I am ruined.
What is it now?
The dead volcano. He's coming to life. See, the smoke is coming from the ground. Senor, fly higher or we are doomed.
Well, that tied it. The dynamite triggered an earthquake. And the earthquake opened up fissures leading far down to where the volcanic fires had been banked for thousands of years. And by the time we got 10 miles away, that entire mountain was blowing up in a vast spouting fire and ashes and molten rock. But somewhere, somewhere down in the heart of that inferno was the Lost City. The city of the fire god. It would have made my reputation. Enough treasure to pay off the national debt. And a howling mob of creatures you wouldn't want to meet this side of hell. Well, that's the story. You read about the new volcano, and now you know what caused it. Would you like to know my theory about those creatures? Well, it's this. 6 or 7,000 years ago, this old earth had some visitors, refugees, you might call them. And some of them settled in Egypt, some in Central America. They brought some highly scientific skills with them, including the secret of overcoming gravity. They ruled for a while, worshipped as gods, and then died out. All except a few who found inside an old volcano a spot just about like home. The native priests managed to lock them in behind that black door and kept them prisoners. After the natives died out, the dog people existed underground, living on mushrooms and keeping their race alive on an animal level. Now they're gone now. But here's a tip for the Army and the Air Force. When you land your first missiles on the moon, keep your eyes open and your guns ready. Because inside those tremendous craters of the moon, living far underground where, maybe, there's still warmth and air, I have a hunch you're going to be running into people. Moon people. Who look a lot like us. Except for their heads.
Suspense. You've been listening to The Black Door, starring Robert Reddick, featuring Ralph Camargo, and written especially for Suspense by Robert Arthur. Suspense is produced and directed by Bruno Zerato Jr. Music supervision by Ethel Huber. Listen again next week when we return with Man Trap, written by John Roberts. Another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense. Listen to Carol Burnett and Richard Hayes weeknights on the CBS Radio Network.
Autolite and its 96,000 dealers present Suspense. Tonight, Autolite brings you a story of treachery and greed. A story we call Murder in G-Flat, starring Mr. Jack Benny.
Greetings, Pepito, my favorite free holy friar. What's on the menu?
The special, Senor Wilcox, she is Autolite Stay Full Battery.
You mean you're serving the battery that needs water only 3 times a year in normal car use?
Si, si. What is better for quick, dependable starts, huh?
Ah, nothing's better than an Autolite Stay Full, that frisky friend of car owners from coast to coast. But...
But? You don't want one, senor?
Everybody wants an Autolite Stay Full. The buxom battery with fiberglass retaining mats protecting every positive plate to prevent shedding and flaking and to keep the Autolite Stay Full battery power-packed for paramount performance.
See, see, how you want it, senor?
Why, it's perfect just as it is, Pepito, and built to give longer life as proved by tests conducted according to accepted life cycle standards. So, friends... Have your neighborhood Autolite battery dealer serve your car an Autolite Stay Full battery, the battery that needs water only 3 times a year in normal car use.
Si, si. And remember,
you're always right with Autolite.
And now, with Murder in G-flat and the transcribed performance of Mr. Jack Benny, Autolite hopes once again to keep you in suspense.
A lieutenant in here, sir, in the rec hall.
What's he doing in the rec hall?
Well, he thought he'd tune the piano while I was waiting, Lieutenant.
Sunday night. Why couldn't you guys pick a better night than Sunday night? My one day off, and I have to come down.
Sorry, we had to call you, Joe.
This the guy, huh?
Yeah. Hey, you.
That's it. C flat. If I had my wrench.
This is the lieutenant.
Oh. Oh, I'm sorry, Lieutenant.
Name?
Oh. My name is Remington. Hercules Remington.
That's it, Joe. We checked.
Huh?
Pardon me, Lieutenant, but my wife, Martha, is going to be awfully worried. You see, I haven't seen her since this morning. They told me.
You haven't seen your wife since this morning?
No, and I thought that if I could phone her and at least tell her where I am.
Where'd you pick him up?
Coney Island, Joe. He called us from there.
Yes, and I should have called my wife, too. Look, Lieutenant, I don't want to seem persistent about
this. You'll
have
plenty of time later to call your wife. Now, give the lieutenant the story in detail, just like you told it to me on the way down here to the station.
What kind of work do you do, Remington?
Well, I'm a piano tuner, Lieutenant. Yours is out of tune. C-flat, Lieutenant. See, if I could get my bag, I'd tune.
Look, Remington, I haven't got all night. Now, either get on with your story or I'll have...
All right, Lieutenant. But I really would like to call my wife first.
Start your story.
All right. But if there's any explaining to be done to my wife, you guys will have to do it.
We'll be happy to. Now, go ahead.
Yes, sir. Well, Lieutenant, this whole mess started yesterday morning, Saturday. I got up, had breakfast with my wife, Martha, and my Uncle Herman. He's my black sheep uncle of the family. He's a carnival man, came to work at the World's Fair here, and has been living with us ever since. I think he ought to pay at least one-third of the rent, but Martha, well, she feels sorry for him. Anyway, I left the house around 10 o'clock on my way to the Lippin Ridge School of Music. I usually tune their pianos on the first Saturday of the month, you see, because there aren't any classes there on that Saturday. I catch the BMT at 57th and get off at Union Square. Well, yesterday morning, I got on the subway, just like I always do. I carry a little ordinary brown bag with all my tools in it and usually lay it right next to me under the seat. I was just sitting there, thinking hard, wondering how I was going to meet the bills at the end of the month, when a man sat down next to me. He shoved something under the seat and just sat there staring ahead. B-flat, D-flat, B-flat, D-flat, B-flat, D-flat.
I beg your pardon.
Oh, I'm sorry. I guess I got carried away for a moment. Four stops later, the man got up, reached under the seat, pulled out a little brown bag, and started for the door. I remember noticing he was bald-headed and wearing big black horn-rimmed glasses. For a minute, I thought he'd stolen my bag of tools, but I reached my hand under the seat and found my bag was still there. I remember sort of chuckling to myself, thinking of the coincidence that he'd been carrying the same type of bag. Well, anyway, I got off at Union Square and walked up to the Lippin Ridge School of Music on 14th. There are four floors there, you know, a piano on each floor, and I usually start at the top and work my way down. Well, since the school doesn't have any classes on Saturday, the place was deserted. That one's sour. Yeah, D flat. Well, I'll soon have that in shape. What the... I zipped open my bag to take out my tuning hammer and my wedges, but there were no tools in my bag. The tools were gone, and in their place were bundles and bundles of crisp $10 bills. And then it hit me. The little bald-headed man on the subway. The man who sat down next to me. This bag belonged to him. He picked up mine by mistake. There was no name on the bag, no identification of any kind. I started counting one of the bundles. Each bundle contained $1,000 in $10 bills, and there were 25 bundles. I had just come heir to $25,000. When I got home, Martha was washing some clothes out on the back porch, and Uncle Herman was rolling pennies for his pitch penny concession. I called both of them into the living room, pulled all the shades down, closed and locked all the doors, and set the bag on the table.
Hercules, what are you doing back home so soon?
What kind of nonsense is this, nephew?
Martha, Uncle Herman.
You look awful pale.
I guess I do.
Hercules, what's the matter with you?
Listen to me, both of you. I'm rich.
Oh, for heaven's sakes, Hercules, act your age.
I'm not lying to you.
Look, I gotta get out.
He must be sick.
Look, will both of you be quiet for just a minute?
Sounds like he's drunk.
Are you sick, Hercules?
Look, I'm not sick and I'm not drunk. I've got it right here.
You've got what?
Look.
Wow.
Hercules.
Now do you believe me? Now do you believe I'm not sick or drunk? Look at it.
$25,000. $25,000? That's a lot of money.
Hercules, where'd you get all this money?
I found it.
Found it?
Found it?
Yes.
Listen to me, Hercules Remington. Don't you lie to me. Where'd you get all that money?
I told you, Martha. I found it.
I haven't lived with you for 10 years for nothing. I know when you're lying to me. Now tell me, where'd you get all this money?
Okay, if I tell you the truth, I know you won't believe
me. Well, tell me anyway.
Well, all right. Look, this morning I got on the subway, just like I always do. And some little bald-headed man with black horn-rimmed glasses sat down next to me. When he got up to get off the subway, I noticed he was carrying a brown bag, just like mine. At first I thought it was mine. But mine was still under the seat. Anyway, when I got to the music school, I opened my bag and all this money was in it. Mm.
Sounds fantastic.
Hercules.
But it's the truth. The little man picked up my bag by mistake. I searched this one for some identification, but there isn't any.
Then you mean the little bald-headed man has your bag with the tools in it?
I guess he does.
It seems odd that anyone would be carrying this much money around in a little brown bag.
Odd or not, the fact still remains that I didn't steal it.
Well, I guess there isn't any way that you could get a hold of this man, so we'll just have to turn the money over to the police.
The police?
Yes, I said the police.
But why?
Why? Good heavens, Hercules, you don't expect to keep this money.
Why not?
Which isn't ours.
Why? Why isn't it ours? I found it. I didn't steal it, Martha.
Hercules.
Martha, don't you see? Maybe this is fate. Maybe we were meant to have this money. Maybe if
you're crazy. You're out of your head. You're talking like a madman, and I won't have it.
But Martha,
you didn't come by this money honestly. It isn't legally yours.
Now, wait a minute, Martha. Maybe Hercules is
Now, you stay out of this, Uncle Herman. Hercules, you're going to take this money to the police.
No. No, I'm not. I'm not going to take this to the police or anyone else. Do you understand me? I'm not going to take this money to the police.
Hercules, I don't understand you at all. But mark my words, you'll pay for this.
Well.
Don't pay no attention to her, nephew.
But why does she have to be that way? Why can't she understand me just this once? Why can't she see my side of it? See, I didn't steal this money.
No, you didn't, nephew.
Then I'm going to keep it.
Sure you are, nephew. Sure you are. You're going to keep it.
You bet I am. The next morning, that was this morning, Sunday, Martha wouldn't speak to me at all. Her eyes were all red and puffed up. I could see that she'd been crying. And Uncle Herman wasn't doing much talking either. Martha just kept sniffling as she puttered around the stove. Martha, my peach isn't peeled.
Peel it yourself.
But I...
Here, I'll peel it for you, nephew.
Thanks, Uncle Herman. Martha, please, won't
you
try...
Don't you talk to me.
Now, don't be too hard on him, Martha. After all, a man's got a right...
I told you once, Uncle Herman, you stay out of this. It's none of your business.
Sorry. She's plenty mad. Well, ain't you going to answer the phone?
Hello?
Mr. Remington?
Yes?
Hercules Remington?
Yes, who is this, please?
I want to return your bag of piano tools to you, Mr. Remington.
I believe
there was a slight mix-up. I believe in my haste I picked up your bag instead.
But how did you find me? I mean...
Oh, it was quite simple. There's only one piano tuner with the initials HR in New York City.
Well, what do you know?
You do want your piano tools back, don't you, Mr. Remington?
Listen to me.
I don't think you'd like the idea of not being able to tune any more pianos.
What?
And I'd like to have my bag returned.
Of course.
As soon as possible.
Yes.
Tonight.
Tonight?
At 9:30 tonight. Meet me at Madison Square Garden.
Madison Square Garden?
At 9:30, at the 49th Street entrance. The door on the far end will be left slightly open. And please be prompt, Mr. Remington, with my brown bag. You see, it will displease my business partner considerably if he finds I've lost the bag.
All right. The 49th Street entrance, the door on the far end.
Hercules, what's wrong? Well, you're as white as a ghost.
I am?
You sure are.
I guess I should be. That was the little bald-headed man with horn-rimmed glasses, Uncle Herman. I've just lost $25,000. Uncle Herman went in the living room to read the Sunday paper. I went in the bedroom to tell Martha about the phone call. But she wasn't there. In fact, she wasn't anywhere in the house. She was gone, and I figured that she'd probably gone over to her sister's house. I was so nervous the rest of the afternoon, I couldn't eat a thing. I left the house for Madison Square Garden about 9 o'clock. From riches to rags in about 24 hours. And I was back riding the subway. I walked up 8th Avenue to the garden. I turned and walked up 49th Street to the entrance and stopped. Sure enough, one of the doors on the far end was open a little, just as the little man had told me it would be. I slipped in through the open door. It was pitch black. I couldn't see a thing. Hello? Hello? Anybody here? Hello? Is there anyone here? What the? I stumbled over something and almost fell. I struck a match and looked down at a body. The body of the little man in horn-rimmed glasses. His head was all covered with blood. I started to blow out the match, and then something caught my eye. Lying next to his body was my brown bag with the initials HR. And next to the bag, covered with blood, was my tuning hammer.
Autolite is bringing you Mr. Jack Benny in Murder in G-Flat, tonight's production in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
Senor Wilcox, why does the Autolite Stay Full battery need water like Pepito needs a hole in the head?
Well, Pepito, the Autolite Stay Full needs water only 3 times a year in normal car use because that consistently conserving and constantly cooperating battery has over 3 times the liquid protection of batteries without Stay Full features.
And why is the Autolite Stay Full strong as a bull, senor?
Because of the fiberglass retaining mats protecting every positive plate. They prevent shedding and flaking and keep the power-producing materials in place.
Greater convenience and dependable starting, yes, Senor?
Right, Pepito. And in addition, the Autolite Stay Full battery gives you longer life, as proved by tests conducted according to accepted life cycle standards.
And all these make the Stay Full welcome as siesta after fiesta. Yes, Senor.
Right you are. So, friends, visit your neighborhood Autolite battery dealer for an Autolite Stay Full, the battery that needs water only three times a year in normal car use. Your Autolite battery man is fully equipped to give you the best in battery advice and service because...
Because you are always right with Autolite.
And now Autolite brings back to our Hollywood soundstage Mr. Jack Benny in Elliot Lewis's production of Murder in G-Flat. A tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Please, Lieutenant, may I call my wife? I want
to... Finish your story first, Mr. Remington. You can call her after that.
Oh, all right.
Now, you were standing over the body of this man in Madison Square Garden. You found your tuning hammer next to the body.
Yes, my tuning hammer. Let me tell you, Lieutenant, I was scared. Plenty scared. There I was standing over a dead man in Madison Square Garden. And clutching my hand was his brown bag containing $25,000. Who would kill him? Who would... But I couldn't stop to think about that now. I had to get out of there and fast and take my bag and hammer lying on the floor with me. I started to reach for my bag when... A sound, G-flat. Someone had opened up a knife. Whoever was coming toward me, I blew out the match and waited. Who was in that corridor with me? Was it the business partner of the little man? Was it... I started to move backwards, and then a big black figure loomed up at me. With all my strength, I brought the brown bag swinging up from the floor. I ran until I thought my legs were gone. My mind was all fogged up now. I couldn't think straight. Who was the guy who just tried to kill me? One thing I knew for sure, I had to get rid of this money until I could think things out. But where? Where could I get rid of it? I neared the corner of 59th and 8th Avenue and then saw it. A bus terminal. Why not? A public locker in the bus station. I opened the door and walked in.
Philadelphia, leaving in 10 minutes.
Yes, ma'am, in about 20 minutes.
Excuse me, mister. I'd like to have a key for a locker.
Just a second.
G sharp.
What'd you say?
Oh, nothing.
What do you know? Haven't got an empty one right now. Have to wait a little while.
You mean out of all of these hundreds of lockers, you haven't got one empty?
Well, I'm sorry, mister, but you can see for yourself. A lot of servicemen in town over the weekend.
Well, how long will it be?
10, 15 minutes. Maybe a couple hours.
Okay, I'll wait. I'll sit over there. I bought a paper at the newsstand and sat down on one of the benches. I didn't even know what I was reading. I just kept... And then I saw it. On page 2. A complete account of a robbery that had occurred on Friday night at one of the downtown post offices. Two bandits had escaped with $25,000 in $10 bills. This was it. It must have been. But would the police believe a story like that? Of course they wouldn't. I had the money, and it was my tuning hammer there, lying next to the body in the garden. I got out of that bus terminal in a hurry and walked up 8th Avenue. Where could I go? The only place I could think of was Coney Island. Coney Island and Uncle Herman and his pitch penny concession. It was late, and the island amusement park was almost deserted. It was cold and close to 11. Uncle Herman was leaning against the side of his concession as I walked up.
Why, nephew? What are you doing out this way?
Uncle Herman, quick, let's go in back.
All right. There ain't no customers anyway. Yeah. Now, what happened, Hercules? Did you give the money back to the man?
I went to meet him at the garden, just like he told me. But when I got there and I found him, he was dead.
Dead?
He'd been beat over the head with my tuning hammer.
Why, Hercules.
I was just about to grab my hammer and bag and get out of there when someone made a lunge at me in the dark. But I got away. I went to a bus terminal to put the money in a locker. I had to wait. And then I read that the money is stolen post office money.
Oh, you got yourself in a mess, nephew.
I'm frantic. I don't know what to do. That's why I came here.
Well, I'm glad you did, nephew. Glad you did.
But what am I going
to
do?
Well, best thing would be to go back and get that hammer and bag. Leave the money here. I'll hide it for you.
But maybe I ought to go to the police.
You can't go to the police with that story. They'd never believe you, Hercules.
I know,
Bring your bag and come with me, nephew. I got a hiding place for that money that no one will ever find.
Uncle Herman locked his place up, and then he led me over to the funhouse. It was closed now, and the place was all dark. But Uncle Herman had a key. He led me up some stairs to a high ramp that people climb on, you know, to slide down the big chute. He stopped at one of them.
Here, nephew. Right under this top chute, we'll just pry one of the boards loose a little and slip the bag with the money underneath. No one in the world will ever look for it. There we are. Now, give me the bag, nephew.
Here you are, Uncle Herman. Are you sure that no one will find it here?
Absolutely, nephew. You and I are the only ones who know where it is.
Well,
there's nothing to be afraid of. Now, hand me the bag.
Here you are.
That's it. Now, let's just check to make sure that...
What's the matter, Uncle Herman?
Where's the money, nephew?
The money? What are you talking about? It's in the...
Is this what you call money? Or this bag's got nothing in it but bundles of torn newspaper?
I don't understand.
Hercules, dear nephew, what did you do with the money?
I don't know. It was in there. You saw it yourself when I brought it
this
home.
This a scheme of yours, Hercules?
Scheme?
Trying to cheat on your dear old uncle, aren't you, Hercules?
Uncle Herman, what are you talking about?
Where's the money, Hercules?
G-flat. That knife. G-flat.
This ain't no time to play games with your Uncle Herman, Hercules.
Uncle Herman, where were you tonight?
What's that, Hercules?
G-flat. Your knife. It's G-flat.
Looks like this thing has got you going, Hercules.
It was you in the garden, wasn't it, Uncle Herman? You killed him.
Let's not waste any more time, nephew. Now tell me where that money is.
I don't know.
Stop lying to your dear uncle, Hercules.
I'm not lying.
I usually use this knife to scale fish. The smell of fish is stronger than the smell of blood.
But I tell you, I don't know where that money is.
You're lying to me. You came down here just to throw me off, didn't you? Make me think you lost the money.
Uncle Herman, stay away from me.
All right, Hercules. So you won't tell your dear uncle.
He rushed at me with the knife. I stepped back, tripped over the board he had pried loose, and fell down. But Uncle Herman... He went hurtling over me, head over heels down the long slide. And I got back down at the bottom of the slide chute. He was dead.
The uncle had his neck broken, Lieutenant.
Yeah. What about the money?
Well, Mr. Remington's wife turned it over to the authorities this morning about 11 o'clock. She said the money wasn't his and she didn't want him carrying it around.
Well, I guess that'll be all, Mr. Remington. You can go now.
But isn't it dangerous? I mean, the partner is still...
We picked up his business partner a few hours after the robbery.
Oh.
But just in case you happen to come across another $25,000 that doesn't belong to you, promise me that you'll get in touch with the authorities, will you, Mr. Remington?
Oh, I've learned my lesson, Lieutenant. Believe you me, I have.
Yeah, good.
Oh, for heaven's sakes, I almost forgot. I gotta call my wife. She's probably frantic by now.
There's a payphone right outside in the corridor.
Payphone?
Yeah, right around the corner. You can't miss it.
Well, she's waited this long. I think I'll just tell her when I get home.
Suspense. Presented by Autolite. Tonight's star, Mr. Jack Benny.
Ah, fine meal, Pepito. So long.
Hey, no dessert, Senor Wilcox?
I never desert, Pepito. I'm always faithful to those 400 fine products for cars, trucks, tractors, planes, and boats made by Autolite in 28 plants from coast to coast. These include complete ignition systems used as original factory equipment on many leading makes of our finest cars. Generators, coils, distributors, electric windshield wipers, voltage regulators, wire and cable, starting motors, and many more. And they're all engineered to fit together perfectly, work together perfectly, because they're all part of the Autolite team. So, friends, don't accept electrical parts supposed to be as good. Ask for and insist on Autolite original factory parts at your neighborhood service station, car dealer, garage, or repair shop. Remember, you're always right with Autolite.
Next week on Suspense, our stars will be Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz in Early to Death. And in weeks to come, you will hear such famous stars as James Stewart, Ann Baxter, and Rosalind Russell, all on Suspense.
Suspense is produced and directed by Elliot Lewis, with music composed by Lucian Morawek and conducted by Lud Bluskin. Murder in G-Flat was written for Suspense by Richard George Petticini. Portions of this program were transcribed. In tonight's cast, Joseph Kearns was heard as Uncle Herman, Bea Benaderet as Martha, and Larry Thor as the lieutenant. Others in the cast were Clayton Post, Jack Crucian, and Paul Fries. Jack Benny may be heard each Sunday on CBS on his own radio program, The Jack Benny Show.
And remember, next week on Suspense, Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz in a story about a mysterious airplane crash in the mountains of Mexico. A tale we call Early to Death.
Buy Autolite Stay-Full batteries, Autolite resistor type or standard type spark plugs, Autolite electrical parts at your neighborhood Autolite dealers. Switch to Autolite. Good night.
Tonight, Autolite salutes the men and women leaders in boys clubs all over America. This is National Boys Club Week, a time to remember that our boys clubs serve the boy, the community, and the nation by training tomorrow's leaders today. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
This has been a Cryptic County podcast. To check out our other storytelling podcasts like Let's Not Meet and Odd Trails, go to crypticcountypodcasts.com. We'll see you next time.
You know what ought to happen next? If this was a horror story...
That's what ought to happen next.
It did.